Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with the author of My Wild and Precious Life, a memoir of Africa, Susie Rowe. The spelling on that is R-H-E-A-U-L-T, and just a wonderful author. Thrilled to have her. Susie Rowe, how are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you.
Well, congratulations on the book. You're getting rave reviews. And let's start with a little bit of your history, your personal history, and start from the beginning. Where were you born? Where were you raised?
Sure. I was an Army brat, and my family moved 11 times by the time I finished high school. I was born in Germany, and they actually goofed up the papers so that I had to be naturalized. But,
wow.
Yeah, so I've had a very... A life of lots of moves.
Yeah, and I guess it kind of sets up a person to be understanding of other cultures when you're always the new kid.
Exactly, exactly. It's a gift that I got because I had to move almost every year, so you had to scope the joint, meet new friends, start with new rules, maybe in different language. So it teaches you to listen for that. And it also makes you kind of restless, which is why I end up going all the way through East Africa to six or seven countries before I landed in Tanzania.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating. I've always found Africa to be just a great place to visit, to study. And tell us about your first trip to Africa.
My first trip to Africa was not like most. I took my 16-year-old son, who was then 16, and we did volunteer work in Zimbabwe with baby lions. Now, the baby lions in the brochure looked kind of cute and bottle-fed. The ones we ended up working with were 200 or 300 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
A big difference. You're not bottle-feeding them.
A big difference, yeah. And the Africans taught us how not to get in trouble with the lions. And things like never leave the human pride, don't run. Don't wear dangly earrings, all kinds of things like that. But it was, these are awesome animals, truly.
Now but, on the dangly earrings, just a quick question on that. Why the dangly earrings? Because of noise or because of just attention that they might be attracted to the movement?
Yeah, they're like overgrown cats.
Yeah.
You know how cats play with shiny things or things that dangle? And these animals, their paws are like dinner plates.
Right.
So you don't want them batting your earrings around.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, just, you know, it's different rules for different areas. Why working with the baby lions? Did they lose the parents? Is that what happened?
They were being raised in captivity so that they could be released as an intact pride. And lions are not singletons when they hunt. They have to have the whole gang, the whole family. Actually, the males kind of watch and the females do the hunting.
Yeah.
But so previous attempts to putting lions out in the wild had failed because they sent them out as singletons and they starved. So we were doing things like building fence and checking for snares and taking the lions out for night drive hunts so that they could eventually bring down prey.
You know, I started out in Tanzania in Arusha National
mm-hmm.
Park, and one of the first things, I had a guide, a single guide named Sylvester Moses, and just a tremendous wildlife expert. I mean, really just terrific. And, you know, no gun, you know, he's not interested in that.
Right.
Beautiful safari vehicle. Well, I don't know, beautiful. It's an old one, but it was safe. It was like a tank. And what he told me.
That's what you want.
Yeah. What he told me about Arusha, and there's no predators for the most part in Arusha National Park. And the reason being, and it's a terrible reason why, is somewhere back in the late 60s and 70s, he explained that the farmers on the outside of the park were losing cattle, And they basically mm-hmm. went in there en masse and just slaughtered all the lions and the leopards and everything else. And they just they killed them all just so they wouldn't lose any more livestock. And, you know, like our first
reaction.
That's horrifying. Yeah, it really is. And our first reaction is wow, how could they, you know, destroy such a beautiful animal and you know, for prosperity and for history and just, you know, people to be able to witness them in the wild. And, it, you know, if you tried explaining that to, you know, a farmer or someone over there, they would be...
Well, these are subsistence farmers who depend on rainfall, which is getting more scarce by the year due to climate change.
Right.
So, you know, they're really... They have a difficult situation. We have our project is actually quite close to what you're describing, and we have close friends who have a house right on the border of that park. And pretty much every night, elephants leave the park and come and walk around their gardens, which are now trampled. But they're not going to shoot the elephants, and they find it kind of amusing.
Yeah, well, the thing, the difference there is that they're not the elephants aren't killing their cattle. You know what I mean? They're stepping on their flowers. Let me remind folks, My Wild and Precious Life is a memoir of Africa, is the work of Susie Rowe, and she is our very special guest. I'm thrilled to have her, Frank McKay, here with Susie Rowe. But you know, again, yeah, right. They're not killing their livestock. And, you know, the people around there are thinking, you know, day by day, week by week, month by month, you know, we're thinking generational and beyond, multi-generational and what's going on.
Exactly.
So tell us about your project.
So the project is called Precious Project. That was named that way by the Tanzanians. It started out in 2010 as a tiny, pretty grim little orphanage for 9 kids, and they lived in a kind of a cement bunker with only 2 beds for 9 kids, no running water, no electricity, and not enough food. So my husband and I literally stumbled on the orphanage that year and decided to get involved and see if we could help, because it kids were clearly right on the edge. And now, some years later, we have a new primary school that schools 350 kids. And then we have a new home, an orphanage, that has 21 kids. And we have an organic farm, and the thing has grown like Topsy.
Amazing. Just wonderful work you guys are doing there, and it's needed.
Thank you. Well, it's the Tanzanians on the ground who really make it happen. We give support. We send over volunteers to teach, to do teacher training and to teach some technology to the teachers. But it's really the Tanzanians who are just remarkable.
Yeah, well, listen, you're being very modest, too, and you're right about the Tanzanians. But the work that you and your husband are doing is, you know, really to be applauded. Let me ask you about the book. When did the idea of the book occur to you, and how long between the idea and the publication date did you have?
So too long, basically, is the answer. But I stumbled on the idea for the book because I have kept a journal my whole life, and a journal is a way to reflect on challenges you're facing, difficulties, things you've experienced. And I've worked in Africa since 2007, so I was writing feverishly in my journal and sending some of the excerpts home, and people said, geez, why don't you write a book? You've got enough material. And so eventually I decided to give it a go. And I used my journals as a stepping off place. To tell the stories.
Terrific. I'm so glad, and I'm sure a lot of people will echo that feeling that you did keep those journals, and it's different, much different than coming back and trying to do things by memory. Many things I noticed in Tanzania, and one of the blaring things is that there's no Wi-Fi. And that sounds trite, or that sounds, you know, simplistic to say, but there's very little Wi-Fi once you get out of, like, the, you know, like anywhere near a hospital or you know, any kind of infrastructure type sites. But the country itself, I was having a hard time, and this is just going back a couple of years, 2 years ago, and I couldn't get on, and it hit me that if someone like you know, Bill Gates or Bloomberg, somebody who's doing some wonderful work in philanthropy and folks that have the money to do so, if they could somehow get Wi-Fi into not only Tanzania but some of the struggling countries, and then we could just take you know, computers that you know, for the most part, end up in thrift stores or end up in the garbage here, that are strong enough to get on Wi-Fi and get them to all the churches and to schools, and that there would.
Well,
be
I'm happy to report that Wi-Fi does exist now in the area, and it's come on like gangbusters. There are a lot of African companies doing Wi-Fi in a variety of ways. And since Africans have cell phones, almost everybody has a cell phone, there are plans where you can get on wireless. So it has changed the business opportunities for most and has been a great advantage.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrific. And again, not, you know, two years ago, I had a hard time getting on with the cell phone in certain, you know, in certain areas.
Right.
But if
we don't send emails from the middle of the Serengeti, for sure.
Right. And if you know, I'm not even talking about that, but some other spots. Susie Rowe, again, is the author of My Wild and Precious Life, a memoir of Africa. Everyone's got to get the book. Frank McKay here with Susie Rowe. But that's I think that would solve a lot of problems, and you know, a lot of the problems that that folks have as far as learning. And you know, and look, I know nothing replaces a teacher and a school setting. But if you can get people to be able to educate themselves in so many ways, I think we're going to see a lot out of these folks who are dying for advancement. I mean, there are, you know, technology and everything else, but there's a tremendous address that, if you would. What do you think it could do? What do you think about the idea of Wi-Fi and widespread Wi-Fi in a place like Tanzania? What do you think
it exists now and is helping businesses enormously. It exists on our school campus, so our kids can access Khan Academy curriculum on their, we have small notebooks that they use. So it's been essential, really. So we're very proud to be one of the fewest primary schools in Tanzania that we know of that's using that kind of technology in the primary grades, because education in Tanzania is underfunded and made overly rigid. So the average Tanzanian public classroom may have 80 to 90 kids and one teacher, and a lot of use of corporal punishment. So that's not learning. That's it's
browbeating. That's browbeating.
It's exactly right. So we prohibit any kind of corporal punishment. It's grounds for instant termination. And we're teaching teachers how to teach in ways that are different from how they were taught, when they were taught to recite things in a little sing-song, write and copy things off of a chalkboard, and that was essentially how information was transmitted. So no teaching aids, no nothing. So when you walk into one of our classrooms, it looks like what you might see in the U.S. With bright colors and teaching aids and kids working in small groups and so forth. When you walk into a Tanzanian public school classroom, it's pretty grim.
Yeah.
It's very grim.
So what is the hope? I mean, obviously, you want to get these facilities that the Precious Project are creating in as many areas as possible. I would assume that's the goal. Am I right?
Well, the goal is not so much to replicate our school. We don't have the means to do that, but we entertain visitors from every place, and they can observe and see what we're doing, and we consistently talk with teachers and schools around the country so that we can share ideas. Our goal with our kids is to get them through. We have 550 at last count. We want to give them a very quality primary education. It's all done in English, so that's the language of commerce. And then we send them off to secondary school, and we hope one day to build one of our own. Our goal for each one of these children who've been beaten, abused, abandoned, is for them to be able to have a happy life and to be able to support themselves. So that's our ultimate goal. And we see kids that have come from the most impossibly grim circumstances begin to flower and begin to smile and begin to take hold. And they love being in school. They love it. Yeah. And their teachers are fabulous.
Well, it's just terrific. Everything that you guys are doing is just, I applaud, and I'm sure anyone listening would say the same thing.
We get so much more than we give, really.
My Wild and Precious Life, a memoir of Africa, is Susie Rose's book, and everyone must get it. I'm sure Amazon and Barnes & Noble and anywhere they sell good books. Am I right, Susie?
That's right. Absolutely.
And before we continue, give us a website or a social media site where people can kind of follow along with what you're doing.
For the Precious Project, it's small case precious project oneword.com, and that will give you perspective on the project in Tanzania, and the book will give you a perspective on some of the work that the Clinton Foundation is doing.
Now you are working with the Clinton Foundation, is that correct?
I'm no longer working with them, but I started working with them in 2007 and worked with them for years before we established the Precious Project. We were, for the Clinton Foundation, the focus was AIDS prevention and treatment, and so we'd perfected a grassroots method of getting villagers and opinion leaders at the grassroots level to come up with ideas about how they wanted to get more people into testing and treatment. We had people bearing children on mud floors of their homes, and we had to really figure out how are we going to get them to deliver in a clinic so they don't transmit the virus to their babies. So we were working on challenges like that, and what was exciting about that was that it wasn't us white folks telling people what to do. It was, in the local language, facilitating meetings. I would train facilitators, and they run the meetings in their local language, having the people at the village level sort out what they wanted to do and what their creative ideas were as to how to reach out more people in their communities. So we would set very aggressive goals, and it was a 90-day project. If you set a goal for a three-year project, it can drag, but if you've only got 90 days to make something big happen, you're galvanized, and we galvanized teams all over Eastern Africa. It was very exciting.
Terrific. Just absolutely terrific. So what's next? What do you, I mean, more of the same? What do you do for an encore? What's next?
What we'd like to have next is enough funds to build and operate a secondary school of the same caliber as the primary school. We've bought 13 acres of land, and we're farming it now because food is very expensive, especially with global warming and some drought. So we're farming it now and hoping that we can raise enough money to... Building a school is one thing, but operating it is really what's costly, getting good staff and paying them well and all the rest of that. So that's our fond wish at this point. And we welcome anybody who'd like to visit our website and get on our newsletter and see what we're up to.
Well, listen, it's wonderful work. Congratulations on all the success that you had with the Clinton Foundation prior to this, and now with the Precious Project. It's good to see that there are people that that care enough about the young folks in Africa. It's needed. It's tremendous. I've seen it up close. I've been to 50 countries and 50 states and six continents.
Wow.
And Africa has become my favorite. And the challenges there are among the highest of any place I've ever seen. And so you and your husband, congratulations, and keep up the great work. And thank you.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
And thank you very much for being here. Again, Susie Rowe, and I'm going to spell it for you. It's R-H-E-A-U-L-T, and it's pronounced Rowe, but go there and Google Rowe, spelt the way I spelt it. My Wild and Precious Life, A Memoir of Africa is the name of her book. Everyone's got to get it. Susie, thank you once again.
Thank you, Frank. It was a pleasure.
Frank McKay signing off. Susie Rowe has been our very special guest. My Wild and Precious Life, A Memoir of Africa. Preciousproject.com is where you should go, and Google Precious Project, and you'll see the wonderful work they're doing. Susie Rowe has been my very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.